And now look at what's happening in the arts and culture in South Louisiana. Acting Up in Acadiana presents Cattails and Doggy Monologues 4. That's this Wednesday and Thursday, tonight and tomorrow evening at the Acadiana Center for the Arts. It's their 2013 student showcase, an original play written by company members, Harmony Decker, and numerous authors who submitted around the country. And this one personifies the stories of animals who live or have lived at Lafayette Animal Aid. And the production aims to educate the public about the mission of Lafayette Animal Aid. That's tonight and tomorrow evening at the Acadiana Center for the Arts, Cattails and Doggy Monologues 4 by Acting Up in Acadiana. The Gaines Center and the UL Creative Writing Program present prize-winning poet Dawn Lundy Martin. This evening, she'll be reading from her work on the third floor of Dupre in the Gaines Center. That starts at 7:30. It is free and open to everyone. Mary Chapin Carpenter and Sean Colvin will be performing tonight at the Hyman Performing Arts Center. This is presented by PASA. Tickets are available through the PASA website or through Ticketmaster or the Hyman Center. That's singer-songwriters Mary Chapin Carpenter and Sean Colvin this evening at the Hyman Center. Tomorrow evening in Grand Coteau, there will be a special program featuring music by Jason Homan and poetry by Chelsea Murray at Casa Azul from 7 until 9 p.m. Afterwards, there will be an open mic. You can bring your own poems or songs. It's a free community event appropriate for all ages. The Beausoleil, Louisiana Solar Home will have a réunion. It's been 5 years since the Solar Home went up to Washington and made all kinds of waves up there. It's the fifth anniversary of that design, and members of the team, as well as UL faculty, administration, and community advisors, will have a roundtable discussion 1:30 p.m. this Friday in Fletcher Hall. That's the auditorium. It'll be open to the public, and the roundtable will begin with a slideshow of the entire story of the Beausoleil home from conception to design, construction, completion, and competition, and life after the competition. The roundtable discussion will follow that presentation, and they will be talking about the impact of the project on the team, the larger community, and the state. After the roundtable, the Beausoleil home will be open to the public for touring from 3:30 until 6 p.m. That's this Friday, here on the UL campus in Fletcher Hall and at the Beausoleil home. And we'll be speaking with Jeff Jertson and members of the team tomorrow about that project. Gordon Goodwin, who is an Emmy and Grammy Award-winning composer, arranger, and musician, will be here in Lafayette Friday and Saturday. He will give a concert as a part of the UL concert series on Saturday for the public. That will be in Angel Hall. But the clinics and rehearsals are open to the public if you would like to go and watch these rehearsals and clinics. They'll take place Friday evening in Angel Hall, and then Saturday morning, Gordon Goodwin will be with some high school jazz programs. And then in the evening on Saturday, he'll be performing with the UL Jazz Ensemble in Angel Hall. He is also the leader of the Big Fat Band, PHAT, and they have won all kinds of awards. And you can hear their music online. For more information about the concert series or Gordon Goodwin's performance, you can call the School of Music. And the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra presents Faith and Music this Friday and Sunday at St. John's Cathedral in Lafayette. Friday at 7:30 and Sunday at 3 o'clock, they will be presenting spiritual music of Bach, Handel, Goretzky, and their guest artist will be Metropolitan Opera soprano Jennifer Welsh Babbage. Tickets will be available at the door, or you can call the office, the Acadiana Symphony office, or their website. Again, that's Music and Faith this Friday and Sunday at St. John's Cathedral in Lafayette. This Friday, the Andrew Zone Robert Sharp Guitar Duo will be giving a concert Friday, March 1st, 7:30 in Burke Hawthorne Hall in the theater. Lovely, intimate little space, great place to hear guitar music. This is also a part of the University Concert Series. It's open to the campus community and the general public at no charge. That's this Friday in Burke Hawthorne Hall. And Acting Up in Acadiana will start on Friday, registration for their Summer Youth Shakespeare Ensemble. The Crowley High School Drama Club presents Aladdin this Friday and Saturday and Sunday at the Grand Opera House of the South. Tickets are available by calling the Grand Opera House of the South. You can get them at the door or ahead of time. The Acadiana Walk to Cure Diabetes will take place this Saturday, March 2nd. Registration begins at 8 o'clock in the River Ranch Town Square. And for a listing of programs on KRVS, you can stop by our website, which is krvs.org, clicking on the schedule button and downloading a weekly schedule. And of course, if you're heading down to New Orleans this weekend, there is an art walk in New Orleans, and two UL and Lafayette artists, Troy Dugas and Stephanie Patton, will be opening at the Arthur Roger Gallery. Stay tuned to KRVS this afternoon and evening. We're with NPR's All Things Considered from 4 to 6. From 6 to 7, Terry Gross hosts Fresh Air. At 7 o'clock, it's Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired. At 8, Mr. Bob Gushereau's Music of Yesteryears. Lee Kleinpeter's Big Band Swings at 9. And Selected Shorts at 10 o'clock, Music from the Hearts of Space at 11. In just a moment, NPR's All Things Considered.
Campus of UL Lafayette. At 4 o'clock, it's All Things Considered from NPR News. Let's start this hour by going into the interview studio with Judith Merriweather.
With me in the KRVS studios this afternoon are artists Stephanie Patton and Troy Dugas, who are here to talk about an opening of their work in New Orleans at the Arthur Roger Gallery. When I say that phrase, I mean, I know so many of our listeners know that gallery. They've been to that gallery. It's an amazing gallery, and congratulations to both of you for being a part of it and having an opening this weekend.
Thank you.
And we're happy to have you in our studios as well, because you two are great supporters of KRVS. And have shared pieces of your work here with us in the halls of KRVS, and we enjoy them, and it enriches our day every day to have those pieces with us as well. In addition, the two of you are alums of UL Lafayette. You're graduates of the visual arts program here at the university. Both got your degrees in painting. So many connections here in our community. What year did you all graduate?
I graduated in 93, December of 93.
So, and then 94, right?
Yeah, around that time. And I have to say, y'all were part of an amazing wave of young artists who came out of that program. And we've talked about that often on KRVS, the visual arts department, what a great tradition it has, and the numbers of artists it has let out into the world. But you all were part of a really interesting group. And so it's even more wonderful that you're showing together, that you came here and that you're showing together. You did go off in some different directions. So before we talk about your work that's going to be in this exhibit, what happened to you after you did your undergraduate? It was both in painting. Stephanie, what did you do?
I did graduate in painting, but I also was definitely experimental and had taken as many photo classes with Linda Fries as I had painting with Alan Jones, you know. So I was trying to figure myself out in that way. And I ended up, after graduating with my first, I guess, multimedia installation, I didn't even know what it was, really, I ended up going to the Art Institute in Chicago for graduate school, with my concentration being in photography. But what I loved so much about the program was how interdisciplinary it actually was. I didn't even take photographs the first full year of my school there. So after that, I packed up my suitcase and I traveled for about a year all over the place, very interesting parts of the world. And then I, when I had saved a little money, I moved to Brooklyn and I joined all the Louisiana crew. And it's funny because I ended up working at Pratt Institute for 5 years in the admissions office, and that's where they all graduated from. So I have a really strong affinity for Pratt also.
Again, in that grand tradition of UL graduates since the 60s heading up to New York for a stint, and yet so many of you coming back down here. So you mentioned multimedia installation. Mm-hmm. It seems like you got into that very quickly after your undergraduate. What drew you to that?
I think it's kind of funny. I started doing what would be considered traditional painting, I think, trying to do the little landscapes or whatever I was supposed to do. Then I started taking photography, and then I realized I've always been a little bit of a performer. So I started doing these self-portraits in the photography classes. And how do you mix those two up? Then I started going into – I also always loved humor in my work, or I just liked – funny things. So I started shopping at thrift stores and getting into all these formal gowns as props for both photographs and for my own physical artwork. I started painting on them in the painting department. And then I got into these vintage purses and suitcases. Well, suddenly I found that I was putting the photographs on the purses and suitcases. And it just started having sort of a really natural kind of evolution that way.
So your whole life became your art. I mean, your interests in objects and what you saw and yourself, you became a part of your art as well. Is that – how old a tradition is that?
I would think that we weren't the first to make it up, for sure.
Not the first, but
no.
It's,
no, it seems like – you know, I don't – that's a really good question. I mean, who knows? I would definitely think – I mean, you think of people like Andy Warhol or, you know, going back that far. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it was – way back.
Mid-century.
But I would think so. But actually, I have to credit Tom Ladusa with this. I'll never forget the, like, about five of us, the little brat pack or whatever. We were sitting at a meeting in the fine arts office, and he said, you know, you can make artwork out of a party. You can have a party, and you can make work.
What a life.
And there I went. It was just like—
Having parties.
Having parties. And believe it or not, it was very much like, when you say that, it's very true.
Teachers never know what they're saying to us. It's going to
impact you. No, it just grew into all of that, like the fake wedding and all these things, Ranella Rose Champagne. That all grew out of fun and collaboration. Definitely a big, big deal. And just living in it and having that kind of freedom to just explore and express yourself. Maybe a little too much. No, it was good. It was all fun. Well, but serious, too. We took ourselves seriously, you know.
Yeah, serious parties.
Very serious party.
Because they were going to be in your portfolio
Yes.
Somehow. The whole shebang. Well, so Troy, you obviously went in a slightly different direction, although I'm sure you were at some of those parties that became art. So you came out of that visual arts painting program as well.
Right.
But then we wouldn't think of you as a painter these days necessarily. What happened right after graduation? What did you go off and do?
Well, it was all applying to graduate school. We were all encouraged to do that. Mm-hmm.
In addition to the parties.
And I mean, watching Stephanie and watching Sean Major and watching Brian Guidry, they all went off to all these graduate schools. And so we're not going to be left behind, you know. Although, I mean, I probably was one of the more quiet and still is shy ones of the bunch. But I still want to be around. glad to be a part of it. I've been in many videos.
It's been good.
But, you know, I went to New York soon after graduation, which was very exciting to get into a school of that caliber. And really just to be in New York was amazing. The education that you get from being there is more than you can imagine, and how much you can learn outside of school.
Right.
So that's where I went.
And you went to graduate school?
I went to graduate school. Okay. And when Stephanie arrived, we met up again. So there's all these sort of like splitting up and then coming back together again. And when she started working there, we were in school there. And then we ended up living about three blocks away from each other in Brooklyn. And then I started participating a little more in the video projects. I can't believe she got me to do some of the things.
Oh, it was nothing.
You know, you what you were going to do.
A lot of fun to be there together at the same time. And then, you know, I think I moved back first, and then Stephanie came back, and we meet up again. And so it's a constant breaking up and meeting up again.
I don't know if there are many other communities in the country that have so many young people who go away, but then they come back you know, in such waves. Well, what happened? Now, Stephanie was obviously having her art happenings and parties and working on her art in that way. How did you, what were you inspired by in New York, and how did it get you to the kind of work you do now?
New York, like I said, I mean, you learn so much, not just in classes, but the museums. I mean, they're just there for you. The MoMA, the Guggenheim, you're just there. You know, you're working in the city and you can take a lunch break and go to MoMA and see your favorite Picasso, which I did, or my favorite Vuillard. And you can go visit those things and contemplate them and see them in real life. Amazing effect. Not only that, but, you know, New York was so good when we were there. It felt so safe and so prosperous. There was lots of work for all of us. We were doing very interesting things, maybe not always in fine art, but I worked a lot in design, in fashion design and in television. And that really influenced my work a lot, too, not only looking at art, looking at contemporary art and experiencing contemporary art, but working in the field of design really influenced the way I looked at things and did things. I worked for a fashion designer for 3 years, and you know, I had to learn how to draft, you know, with a pen and a ruler. And I'd never done that before, because in drawing class we use charcoal and we smush things around. So I learned new skills that I could apply to my personal work.
Well, it sounds like the two of you made the most of your time.
I say that all the time. Yeah. We've got so much out of this place, and some people don't. You know, they go there and they get discouraged and lose faith, and the city can eat you up. It's a rough place. You know, it's very fast-paced. It's like information all the time. Multiculturalism everywhere. I mean, you know, you have to be used to, you know, living in places that, you know, you might be the minority. What does that feel like? You know, here you don't feel that as much, but if you go to New York and live somewhere, you probably will be the minority, and it feels great. You know, it's like a whole way of looking at the world.
And also, just carrying eight grocery store bags up three flights of stairs.
I still do it.
It's really, you know, I remember moving back thinking, oh my God, I have a car. Like driving down Johnston Street was surreal, completely. Yeah. But, you know, it was all of that. It was such a great experience.
Sometimes I still shop. I'm like, I still think I need to carry all of my bags.
Yeah.
I still do it.
Because you don't want to, I mean, you're on the subway or whatever, you know. You
can't leave them behind.
Yeah.
I want to tell people who are tuning in right now that my guests are artists Stephanie Patton and Troy Duca. They open exhibits at the Arthur Roger Gallery in New Orleans this weekend. There's an opening on Saturday. So if you find yourself heading down that way this weekend or maybe afterwards, you can stop in at the Arthur Roger Gallery, see their work. They are from this area. Actually, you're from New Orleans originally, aren't you, Stephanie?
I was born there, but yeah. We didn't live there long.
Spend a lot of time. Both graduates of UL Lafayette in visual arts and painting, and their lives obviously have crossed in many ways, and went to New York and eventually came back here. So you had all those experiences in New York. You worked in many different kinds of jobs and then decided to come back. What influenced your decisions to come back here and work as artists here?
Do you want to go first since you came back?
Oh, because I came back first. It was difficult because things were going so well. I mean, I was, you know, a lead designer at, you know, the number one children's television show, which was really a lot of fun, and I learned so much.
Blue's Clues.
And it, you know, I really learned a lot, and I loved it. I was having my first museum show. I was illustrating a book for Simon & Schuster. I was doing all these multiple things, and I don't know how I was handling it, but I was. And then 9/11 happened, and we all sort of, we watched it, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was, you know, running in the park late for work and, mm-hmm. you know, saw the buildings, you know, and everything just shifted. It just shifted, you know. I didn't even go to my show at the museum. It was difficult to finish the book I was working on, and I was a full-time lead designer at a show. So I couldn't really do all those three tasks. I can only do one. I went to work. And that's really the only thing I could do. And
after that.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I just sort of kept going to work. Everyone kept going to work. Mm-hmm. The city changed. It just completely changed. I don't mean to be so dramatic, but, you know.
It changed for different kinds of people in different ways. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting to hear your perspective being from another place, mm-hmm. and working in such diverse areas of the city. I mean, to see how that affected you.
And I felt like I'd gotten everything and more out of being there. I really did. I was like, God, I've done everything I wanted to do and much, much more. So it just sort of was a decision to start thinking about coming back home.
Mm. Stephanie, was it around that time?
I probably stayed about another year and a half after. Mm-hmm. Brian was first, then you and Ralph and Sean, and I stayed. I had a great job. I was director of grad and international admissions. It was a big deal for me over there for the last 2 years. And I was also... I liked it, but then I started getting jealous because I would see these people. I was working with faculty members thinking I could be teaching, and I realized that I was on the wrong career track in terms of a full-time job. Mm-hmm. That was part of the reason that I want. Of course, I missed my family mm-hmm. and friends. My grandmother was getting older. There were other reasons. But one other major incentive for me was the opportunity to teach at UL mm-hmm. whenever we had that chance. And to be able to be an adjunct over here, I just thought, I'm going. And I never regretted that for a second. And I actually also think that being an artist here, I felt more like an actual practicing artist in Lafayette than I did in New York. New York was great, but when you're working like crazy and you have a few hours at night, you kind of need to like eat sushi or something, you know. You don't really go home I did a lot of video, which was interesting. Some sewing, began more sewing, but video was a big part of my artistic experience and performance.
It was more difficult to be an artist there.
Interesting to hear you say that, because that's why so many people go there to be the artist.
But you end up in a little corner and not much space and not much time, and you know.
But it's very important. I think it's very important to leave, to experience that stimulation, to come back, also take an event. Lafayette's a great place. When someone tells me something about Lafayette, like why are you here? It's because I choose to live here. That's why I'm here. Because I love it. I love the people. And I think it's a very strong artistic community, especially for the size. You know, I mean, people, not one person I've ever asked, do you want a show in Lafayette? Has anyone ever refused? Mm-hmm. And these are people from New York, California, whatever. You know,
well, so, and just to hear you say that you can be more of an artist,
there are
many of us who like the place, like so many mm-hmm. elements of it. But to say that you actually can be more of an artist here, that's quite a mm-hmm. statement.
Yeah, definitely.
And of course, between Lafayette and New Orleans, mm-hmm. so many great ways to show your work and
very
so many
thankful
wonderful...
for that.
Yeah.
Very thankful for the Arthur Roger Gallery for having that, you know, letting us.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. Again, Troy Dugas and Stephanie Patton, my guests, are working here in the Lafayette area. They have exhibits opening this weekend at the Arthur Roger Gallery in New Orleans. Troy, the title of your exhibit is The Shape of Relics, and Stephanie, yours is called Private Practice. And that brings up all kinds
it
of
does,
images.
Doesn't it?
Yes. And Troy, I guess we should tell people we're not really familiar with your current work that you do a lot of mosaic with product labels.
I collect mm-hmm. Product labels, unused product labels in bundles. And I've basically for many years I've approached it in a couple of ways where I would take like 1,000 of the same label and dissect them and, you know, take an element out of it, a piece of text, a piece of color, a line. And so with 1,000 of them, you can, you know, take that element and repeat it so I can create lots of repetition and pattern. And that's one way I've been working with the material. Another way is to actually shred the material so you have less control of isolating areas, but it's more random, and so the pattern becomes more random. So there's two ways I've been working for many years, and that's the way I've written about it and discussed it, and it's allowed me to continue making the work because I'm still interested in it. I'm still, and a lot of it too is collecting the stuff. It's like I'm just like this crazy scavenger, you know, and mm-hmm. trying to find and collect this material. And I've been doing it for years. It's just that's part of it, you know, the attraction to the material. And then you have all this stuff that you can paint with. I know you say mm-hmm. your work's not really like painting, but to me,
it is.
It's like painting with ink and with paper.
Yeah, just colors collected from a different source. Mm-hmm. Well, so you don't go around looking in trash bins for these labels.
Antique dealers, because a lot of the material is old and factories closed down and products are discontinued. And so people deal with paper ephemera, have lots of this stuff, you know. And so I sort of...
It's like factories would have boxes of their old labels.
Exactly.
Well, tell us about some of the labels you've enjoyed most finding.
The first, when I was in New York, you know, before eBay, there was, antique markets in New York. They closed 10 streets and from 22nd Street to 30th, and I love that day.
Yeah, you know, we can hear it in your voice.
You just walk. I mean, it's just like antique dealers would come out into the streets, into the parking lots, and oh my gosh. I mean, you know, I found a bag of cigar bands, like probably 5,000 of them for $5. You know, it's old material. And I mean, of course, you have to have that. And so I brought it to the studio. It hung around for years, and I stuck a couple of them in my paintings. I started sticking them in the paintings, you know, until eventually there was
precious.
No.
You just used little bits at
a time. I didn't know how to use it, you know, mm-hmm. and it wasn't a proper art material, so mm-hmm. I stayed away from it for a long time. But I also was shredding paper. I used to work in the financial aid office, and I was shredding documents. So I was making paintings with shredded printed paper. So the printed material thing has always been there for years. But finding these labels really to have a mark that's the same. You can like Van Gogh making the mark. I can make that mark with that
over and over again. Yes. Cigar labels and the other old vintage labels excited about.
I have these old French labels that I got from a dealer, and I'm pretty much in touch with this guy. He has tons of stuff, and I like the old paper. I like the old ink. Some of them, I'm working with one right now, actually, I really like. It's black with embossed silver, and it's just text, and it says modernized, what does it say? Modernized for mildness. That's my next show title.
Was that soap or
No, it's a cigar.
Cigars.
It's a little cigar on the box, like a box label.
Those are very artistic, the cigar boxes and labels.
Yeah, they are. And there's art on them. So, right, I mean, I'm sorry I'm cutting the art up, but I'm making new art out of the art that exists.
They're beautiful, though. Right.
The labels are very beautiful. I'm very attracted to the material.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, the one that you have shared with us here at the station is Evangeline Made Bread. And mm-hmm. everyone who sees it just responds so mm-hmm. viscerally. I mean, it's part of our childhood around here, Evangeline Made Bread, and it just... It seizes them with this.
I have so much. Someone gave it to me because mm-hmm. they saw a piece in Baton Rouge, and it was a student of mine. His father, I don't know how this happened, saw my work in Baton Rouge. And one day this guy showed up at my door with this huge roll of Evangeline. I mean, the stuff's on a roll. It's like a giant, I could wrap your building, you know, with Evangeline. Well, it's like they're not cut. They're on this big roll. Yeah. Actually, that material, I love it, and I'm attracted to it. But the material itself is actually very plasticky.
Yeah, it's colorific.
It's hard to work with.
So some labels, because of the way that they're made, are hard. Mm-hmm. If they're too thick or if they have adhesive on the back, I don't like that. So if they're like not touched, never out of the package, and no adhesive, you know, mm-hmm. and they're a nice paper.
And you know, some people, if they're trying to envision what we're talking about, you do have a website, and mm-hmm. people can see some of your pieces there, and it's just Joy Dugas. Mm-hmm. Just look for that. Well, the pieces that you have at the Arthur Roger Gallery, maybe you have some of your more classic pieces, but you've also gone in another direction. They're more figurative mosaics.
Right. I mean, I've been working abstractly for mm-hmm. a very long time. I've worked my way up to making abstract art. I always wanted to, but I never felt like I had a reason to. I always admired abstract artists, but like anyone else, I don't understand abstract art. You know, it's very hard to understand. So I just felt like I didn't really have the intellect. I knew all these people who were so smart in New York. They influenced me, another influence, people making this abstract work. And I was like, well, I'd love to make abstract art, but I don't really have a reason. But as soon as I got home back to Louisiana, I started making abstract images with the labels mm-hmm. And been doing that ever since. But this new work, I had to do it. I don't know. I wanted to make portraits. And so it's very figurative, but I'm using the same material. I'm using the elements and making the patterns and, you know, making things, making it look like fabric, making it look woven. But the figures are inspired by these paintings from Roman and Egyptian times, ancient times, that they did on for mummies. Mm-hmm. So they would put them on their tombs. If you look in our history books, you'll see them, and they're very recognizable, and everyone, I think, responds to them. It's amazing.
It's those beautiful Mediterranean faces.
Yes,
we're not talking
yes.
about the ancient Egyptian pieces.
No, not the flat.
Yeah, the more Roman.
What you would expect, because mm-hmm. that's why I'm so interested, is that back in the ancient times, everything was very flat, and you know, they didn't know how to develop realism. These are kind of realistic. They represent the sitter. So I'm just really drawn to those, and I'm working from them.
But yet still using these labels and pieces of paper to
right.
create those colors and shapes.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm. yeah.
How large are these pieces?
I've also been working fairly small. I mean, those are 4x4 feet, which is a bit smaller. I've been working very large for the last few years. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm a little afraid of them. I don't know why. They're hard to describe, and it's hard to take that departure when mm-hmm. people are – you know, you want to do what's expected of you, you know, and that's recognizable mm-hmm. of your work.
Like, so a musician always getting the same request for
that
old song.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I just had to do them. I don't know.
So what is the balance of new work and older work?
It's mostly my recognizable work. Mm-hmm. I only have a few of the portraits. I also mm-hmm. have a couple of still lifes. So I really kind of branched out a little bit into some more, I guess, traditional imagery, you know, pictures, mm-hmm. making pictures.
If you are tuning in, I've just been listening to Troy Duga talk about his exhibit called The Shape of Relics that opens at Arthur Roger Gallery this weekend. Also at the gallery is Stephanie Patton, who is with us, and her exhibit is called Private Practice.
Private Practice.
Which does sound like a soap opera, but... So, and people who are listening may have been hearing you talk about parties and, you know, using life as a starting point for your art. Describe the bulk of these pieces and where this came from.
It's interesting. I'm excited, very excited about this show. Obviously, it's a big opportunity for me, and I appreciate it very much. A Private Practice, well, it's definitely got an influence of that kind of comic element. I had the show General Hospital, which was based off loosely off of a soap opera title. But I've been really interested in work that deals with like mental and physical health and all these ideas of protection and comfort. And I've been working with – it's funny. One of my friends said, oh, this is a new direction for you, these white vinyl pieces. I said, actually, I've been working with white vinyl since 2006. And when I think about it, just that material alone, I've been sewing – when I think about it, since 1995. And I was doing pink satin padded walls back then. Now it's turned into white vinyl. It's more minimal. They are sort of these relief sculptural pieces. And I really, one of the things I'm liking about them personally is the interaction of people to them. For the General Hospital show, one of the things I was most surprised about were how many people I saw taking their pictures in front of the actual pieces. Like if I had these big angel wings, to have this, you know, these people just posing under them. It was really interesting when this group of elderly people came to the show, and you wouldn't believe how many of them were posing and getting their pictures taken under the angel wings.
I hope so, you got a picture.
I think so. I hope so too. But no, I really, there's something about it. I'm liking that there, in some ways, this show is a little more minimal in a sense for me. I have, these large scale white vinyl pieces, and I'm also been doing a lot of work with the mattress quilting and mattresses, and I have a video in it. So it is a little combination of.
So are the mattress quilting pieces, is that cloth or is that still the white vinyl?
Oh, no, that's also mm-hmm. like imagine a cookie cutter in a mattress. I mean, there are actual letters that spell out these words. You want me to tell you?
Well, we can save it for the exhibit, but as many people may not make it. What?
Yeah, good boy. So that would be an example of one of the pieces. It's blue mattress, but I make them. So it's I measured a mattress, so it's like 7 or 8 inches deep, and I have been doing a lot with not only the batting, like pillow stuffing with the white vinyl pieces, but I've been using a lot of upholstery foam and also sewing. I've funny how I'm now connected to all these mattress companies. But I've been getting the fabric and basically forming it around the shapes of the letters. So that piece in particular, I thought it was kind of funny and multiple and serious too. My work is not just funny. It's definitely got a very serious undertone to me.
All studies humor, about humor say that it is serious.
It's very true with my stuff too. And but I like the humorous edge to it. And the Good Boy piece is also like that.
Well, and what you said when you first started talking about it, that's the idea of protection and comfort that we're all drawn to and are concerned about and want to ensure that we all have in some way or another. Mm-hmm. And so where did private practice come from? Why did you name it that?
I had a little bit of help from a friend. I will just let you know, Brian Guidry helped me out with that one. But, you know, for one, titles, I think, for my work are – it's important because I think it's an entryway. I think that the General Hospital title was really important for me because, yes, it was funny if you know the soap opera, but the work itself is actually very serious. And when I look at it, I'm like, gosh, that thing is all about death and dying and all this stuff, you know. And I was trying to come up with the right title for this, and I did think of different things. But when you think of what you personally – I like this title – because what you have to do to personally overcome obstacles in your own life, whether it be physical ailments or painful experiences that you might have had as a child or an adult, eventually, hopefully, you can overcome it and move on.
And find that comfort and protection.
Find that place, you know, and whatever. So the private practice, yes, I think there's actually a TV show called Private. And I was like, oh, no. I saw that after I had committed to this title. No, but I think it's actually funny and goes right along with the other titles that I've had, you know.
Yeah. Well, and we were just having a discussion at Care of Yes the other day about how difficult it is to find the right mattress.
So. You're not going to believe my dad is a furniture sales representative. He worked for Corsicana Bedding for like 25 years. So it's really funny.
Full circle.
There it is. I mean, I would have never dreamed.
Something in your childhood is coming up. It's bubbling
funny.
Up.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Fluffing up. Yeah. If you are tuning in, my guests are Stephanie Patton, Troy Duga, artists. They will open their exhibits in New Orleans this weekend at Arthur Roger Gallery. Troy, it's your third show there. Mm-hmm. And Stephanie, this is your first major show, solo show that you're having. So congratulations on those.
Thank you.
Again, should anybody want to see more of your images, you each have a presence on the web and people can search you out. Stephanie Patton, Troy Duga. And again, both graduates of UL, a wonderful little wave. And you mentioned so many other artists who came out of that time period.
Oh, yeah, it's been
Brian
great.
Guidry, Sean Major. And
Ralph Bork.
Yeah. Amazing artists, amazing professors as well. So
can I just say one other thing, just to let everyone know, it is being extended. It's going to run through April 20th. So there probably is going to be a second art opening, but this is the major one. Mm-hmm. It's happening this Saturday.
Yes. Okay. So about a month and a half to see these exhibits. Mm-hmm. If you find your way down to New Orleans, you may want to check those out. And of course, you can always come to the Care of Yes Studios and see a couple pieces as well. Well, thank you both for sharing your time and thoughts about your art. And we look forward to decades to come of your artistic development.
Thank you
both.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And now joining me in the KRVS studios with the Acadiana Food Circle are Tyler Thigpen, Daphne Turner-Olivier, and Sal Lapinto, here to talk about the organization as well as their second annual Fresh and Local, which is an informational and beneficial event that helps out the Acadiana Food Circle. So I think we'll first start off reminding people what your organization is, what your mission is. And I guess, Tyler, you were one of the founding members, and you've been on the board. So I'll ask you about that first.
Okay. Our mission is to educate the public on healthy local food choices and facilitate the connection of local consumers to local producers. For example, recently a pepper guy came to us and he needed to sell some peppers. And one of the local breweries was looking to include peppers in their brew. So we were able to put them together and get that association started.
So y'all are like facilitators and you put people together. You match up people's interests in part of this large movement. And that's really what you noticed. And I think many of us do as well. You know, there's so much talk about farmers markets and there's something growing. There's this gathering feeling that people are interested in it. And it feels in a way like something vintage as well, because obviously it's something all of our grandparents did.
It
looks like we're coming full circle back to it. But the interest is growing, and so many people that you might not even expect to hear talking about it do.
Right. And that's kind of where the name Food Circle comes from. Mm-hmm. It is full circle from the earth to the consumer to the restaurant and back again. And we're all about finding good collaborations between businesses and producers and artisans and anybody that employs the use of local foods. So that's our big mission. And then spreading the word, of course, through our directory.
Yeah, I guess just in encouraging people personally, because a lot of people have gotten interested in gardening and growing some of their own food as well.
Right,
so
yeah.
You're helpful in that respect also. So one of the things that you began doing when you formed was to create a directory where people could find that. They wouldn't have to necessarily call you and say, can I find this? They could find it in the directory. How's that work going?
It's going really well. We have over 100 entries in the directory, and that's throughout the 22 parishes of Acadiana, and it's growing every day. We have a new meat producer I need to add, as well as somebody that makes soap out of goat's milk. So, we're finding people every day. And we're actually going to put it in print finally. We've been saying that for almost 2 years. We have the funding through a grant, and we're going to put it in print in April. So we just got the proof for that.
It is available online, though.
It is right at www.acadianafoodcircle.org, and then hit the directory tab.
Okay. Yeah. But hopefully for Fresh and Local, you think you might have copies of it printed out? Not sure yet.
Probably not, but we'll certainly direct people towards the website.
Maybe some proofs or something.
Yeah, that would be nice.
If you are just tuning in, my guests are with the Acadiana Food Circle, Tyler Thigpen, one of the founding members of the Food Circle, and with us also Daphne Turner-Olivier and Sal Lapinto. How did you all get involved? Daphne, how did you get involved in the Food Circle?
I'm not sure how I first heard about it, but whenever I did, I said, that's something that I need to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And so I contacted Tyler and said, I'm interested. What can I do? And so she's kind of started appointing things for me to do. And really my role is to help spread the word and focus a lot on the health aspect of eating local and the nutrition aspect of eating local foods.
Mm-hmm. So personally, that was just an interest of yours. Are you a gardener?
I'm actually a dietitian.
A dietitian. Okay,
yes.
So you came from it from that aspect, and I'm sure they're very grateful for your participation.
Yeah, this is my passion, and it has been for a very long time. So it was great to see that there was an organization that was already put together that I could just jump on board and become a part of.
Mm-hmm. And what is your background in dietetics? How did you get started in it? Did you study it in college?
I did. I'm a registered dietitian. So I went to school here at UL and then did my internship over at the VA hospital in Tampa. And I've worked through some clinical areas and worked in hospitals and nursing homes, that sort of thing. And then most recently, I've kind of branched out on my own and I have a private practice.
I think people will find that interesting. You know, we know there are dietitians around, and sometimes we just associate them maybe with hospitals, you know, but
right.
that you could have a personal dietitian and go to someone and, you know, work with your own personal needs and interests.
Right.
You know, this is very timely as well, because I think it was just last night Terry Gross was interviewing someone who's been doing research and studies about processed foods. And yeah. It was a fascinating story. I think he's published a book on it as well. But it was very, very interesting, and probably one thing that drives a lot of people to think about natural and homegrown. So, Sal, how did you become involved with the Food Circle?
Well, I was looking for a way to spend time, volunteer time, and Daphne is a friend of my sister's, mm-hmm. and I knew that she was involved with health-related stuff. I knew she was a dietitian, and one day we met, and she was basically did a brainstorming session with me, and Food Day came up. And that's really how I got started in it, just by assisting Daphne. And now I'm trying to, you know, broaden my circle a little bit more and, you know, help out with other things.
We keep using that word circle. It's very appropriate
it
for
is.
Your organization. So that was of interest to you, natural foods and learning more about the movement and...
Very much so. I recovered my own health, you know, mm-hmm. by learning to take care of myself by eating, mm-hmm. you know, foods that actually make you feel good and mm-hmm. recover your health.
That are food. And
that are, actual yeah. real food, yeah. as Daphne would say.
Yeah. And, I saw a great poster. It must have been on Facebook, and it said, fruit is fast food. yes, it is. No hassle, no waiting.
And I'd like to add that Daphne and Sal were huge in Food Day, which is on October 24th each year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so they were really instrumental in making that happen this year, and that's how we all got connected, because Acadiana Food Circle is also a part of that. So
and that
they're
was
really,
quite successful, as I recall. A lot of people attended.
It was, mm-hmm. and they're so passionate and educated on local foods, so they're a great, great addition to Acadiana Food Circle.
All right. So you have an event coming up. You had it last year, and
yes.
people enjoyed it very much.
Yes.
And it involves food, but also some great music as well. And
right.
We do tend to combine that here in ways maybe people in other parts of the country don't in quite the same way. So it's a benefit for Acadiana Food Circle. Mm-hmm. It's going to be on March 16th. And what's going to go on? I assume that you all are in the planning of it right now.
Yeah, so last year we had a fashion show fundraiser for the first annual, and that was mainly Lacey Dupree, who's one of the board members, but she's out in San Diego working on a degree, so she's not with us right now. But this year we focus more on the local foods movement itself, and we're having a farmer's market and a jam during that, and then some local foods restaurants similar to last year, and then the bands. And so that'll be from 7 until whenever,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
and we can all talk about what's
yeah.
going on there.
Now, do you also know, you mentioned, Daphne, that you're a dietitian. Are there going to be, like, informational tables? You can have information, I guess, of course, information about the directory, but just foods in general? And,
yeah, there will be some farmers. It'll be a farmer's market,
mm-hmm,
so there
mm-hmm.
will be some of the farmers from the Hub City Farmers Market and Freetown Farmers Market, from the Kaplan Farmers Market. So there will be farmers there actually selling their own produce and other such things.
Mm-hmm.
And then there will be some information tables. So certainly Acadiana Food Circle will be there with a few other vendors who are just going to be distributing good information.
Mm-hmm. And Daphne will be there as well. Like,
I will be there.
Educating on
yeah.
that. Yeah.
And anyone there, I'm sure, eager to talk to people who come about food, about the movement, local food movement, and also good diets.
Right.
Yeah. And Sal, what are you going to be doing, or how are you helping to organize this day?
I'll probably spend most of my time shadowing Daphne and, and Tyler, but, you know, I'll just... you know, help out with as much as I can.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And enjoying the music.
Yes.
Who are the bands that will be at Fresh and Local?
Tom, or...
Well, yeah, Tommy Misha is going to be on the front porch during the farmer's market that Daphne was talking
mm-hmm,
about.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sal, which restaurants are going to be on there?
We got Saint Street and Great Harvest Bread, Carpe Diem, and I think... Is that it? I'm not sure.
Jolie's will also be there. They were there last year. And then after all that goes on, so we're going to have, all at the same time, we'll have Tommy Michaud leading a front porch jam with his amazing musician friends, the farmer's market on the front lawn, and then the free food from Carpe Diem, Great Harvest, Bread Company, Jolie's Louisiana Bistro in St. Streeton. And then at 9, Holy Ghost People goes on the back porch. Maker's Reel follows them, The Pits, Sassafras Jubilee, and then DJ Andre Broussard, your own.
Yes,
DJ
KRVS Andre. Is the flip side.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Wow.
He'll be doing a dance party, which was a big success last year. And with DJ Andre Broussard, we know it will be this year.
And after eating all of that really natural food, just think how much energy you'll have
to go to
a dance party afterwards. If you are tuning in, we're talking about the second annual Fresh and Local, which is going to be on Saturday, March 16th. And it is a benefit, an event for the Acadiana Food Circle, a nonprofit organization in our community, helping us all learn more about natural foods and what's going on in our community, individuals who participate, and organizations. With me are Tyler Thigpen, one of the founders of the organization, as well as Daphne Turner Olivier and Sal Lapinto. So can people purchase tickets at the door? They don't need to get them ahead of time.
Yeah, we did, we did advance ticket sales last year, and we had a great amount of support from the Master Gardeners, but a lot of them, I think, bought tickets just to support us and then they didn't actually come out to the event. So we decided to do $10 at the door and just the day of. Mm-hmm. And because we're not doing the fashion show this year, we figured we wouldn't need to do pre-sale. It'll just be another great night at the Blue Moon.
Right. And what time does it start?
At 7 o'clock. And then I guess. I don't know when it's going to end. It depends.
I guess, Tyler, how long have y'all been in existence?
Since April of 2011. So almost 2 years.
Not even 2 years.
Yeah.
And you all have done all of this, and you've attracted people like Daphne and Sal to want to be a part of this. And I mean, that's one thing. You know, sometimes organizations start and they don't attract a lot of people, but I think this has.
We really do. We have a wonderful following in the community and so many people supporting us. We have a couple hundred people on our listserv that get our newsletter. You can sign up for the newsletter at www.acadianafoodcircle.org. We have 470 people on Facebook on our group, and then we have about 300 something on our page. We have a group page, and then we have just the page that you can like, one that you can be a member of and one you can like.
Well, they're all fascinating. I think I'm a member of both of them. And you get such great information on them. And people post very interesting observations. And so, yes, look up Acadiana Food Circle. And you can find them in many ways on the web, so many social platforms. And if you have any questions, certainly anyone who's involved with it, happy to talk to you about it, the organization.
Yeah.
If you're interested, like Daphne and Sal were, in participating and joining and volunteering and helping out as well. So, the directory that you mentioned is available now, so people don't have to wait for it to be in print, but some people do like those books.
Right. Yes. Yeah, and we're part of a grant, a Healthy Living Club grant, and so we will be able to send those out. We're going to have funding to send them out as well, so people can request them, and we will have postage to send it out, and then hopefully we'll have it printed in April. So fingers crossed, nothing ever goes perfectly as planned, but it's moving along.
And Daphne, do people from this area ever come up to you and just go, how do I do it? How do I eat healthily in this environment?
Oh, I do. I hear those questions all the time. So a lot of times the concern is that people know what to do, they just don't know how to implement it. And that's really kind of what my role is as a dietitian, is to help guide you in the right direction and then actually put those practices into practice so you can make those changes along the way.
And is it hard for a lot of people? You know, people talk about food here almost in the way of, I don't know, an addiction to something. You know, it's people are passionate and they love it. And
I think when the time is right, people are able and willing to make changes and do, we can still incorporate our fabulous culture here. And what I'm kind of hoping is going to happen is that we're going to incorporate our culture and and the local food farmers as coming kind of into one so that they can work together.
You know, just mentioning our grandparents a little bit earlier, when I would hear them talk about their gardens, those were all vegetables. Mm-hmm. You know, for all we think that it is all just, you know, meat and, you know, fatty things, people used to plant a lot of vegetables, and that was mm-hmm. a large part of their diet. And that seems to be the part that's gotten lost around here.
It's coming back around. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's coming back around.
It is. And that's another thing about the directory is we have sustainable gardening resources mm-hmm. as a section. And people can call these resources mm-hmm. and they'll come out and plant the whole garden or they'll give you advice. So you can start
planting your own and eating more vegetables like you should. Incorporate them along with the mm-hmm. other types of food that we have here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the community supported agriculture shares also mm-hmm. allow you to do that. You can subscribe basically to mm-hmm. a 10 or 12 week program where you get fresh vegetables every week.
Kind of like an Earthshare garden.
Right, so we have multiple farmers that offer that, and that's in the directory as well.
Right. Well, thank you for all your work and making us more aware of these options that we have on so many levels. This is the Acadiana Food Circle. My guests are all a part of it, Tyler Thigpen, Daphne Turner-Olivier, and Sal Lapinto, here talking about the Food Circle. You can look up more information on the web or Facebook, but there's an event on Saturday, March 16th at the Blue Moon called Fresh and Local, and it is their second annual. And I know the posters are lovely. I'm assuming there's probably a t-shirt along with that too. Is there this year?
Or? We need one. That's a good suggestion.
It's so beautiful. I could just see one of these stuck on a shirt.
Yeah. Nice. And our designer's amazing. Yeah. So I'm sure she could work
Very
something
good.
Up.
Well, you can pick up a poster as well. Well, thank you all for coming by to let us know more about it.
Thank you so much for having us.
We look forward to the food and music on the 16th.
Thank you.